And the invitation is presented. We'll be singing 585. 585.
Well, what a blessing it is to see you, friends. It really is. I cannot thank you enough for your faith and your conviction in God that brings you out to come and gather in His name to worship Him. And I just thank you so much, friends. I commend you for it. And I do want to welcome as well the visitors we have. We have some who are with us, and we are grateful for you. And we hope that you leave here closer to God. And we hope that you leave here with more people in your life who are your friends and who care about you. But we're grateful that you're here with us. It has been a whirlwind of a week. And obviously our trials are no greater than your trials. Yet this was something that was quite an eventful week for us. We, of course, went down to Kentucky on Wednesday to go to the funeral of a brother in Christ who passed away tragically the previous Saturday. And while we're going down to Kentucky for me to do that service, we get the call that Stephanie's nephew was tragically killed that night in a car crash. And then, of course, we came back Wednesday night, and then we flew out early Friday morning to go to the service yesterday, and then flew back last night. And it was a whirlwind of a week, and one that did not anticipate having to preach two funerals in 1 week. But the Lord got us through that. And I just want to, she and I both want to thank you all for the compassion and the concern you've shown and the effort you put forth to reach out to encourage us and to uplift us, and still are doing that. And that means so much to us, friends. We are just so grateful to know you and grateful to be here and grateful to be part of this work. The one thing the Lord has done for us very richly as He has surrounded us with some tremendous people to get through life with here in Kentucky, and even going down to Georgia. Just so impressed with the fact that the Lord has surrounded us with so many people who are just so good and so kind. And I'm thankful for that. But obviously, after that type of week, your mind, and especially in preparing lessons for death and for preparing for death and thinking of death and things like that, I came across something developed in my thinking of a sermon that I've never preached before, but it just kind of just seemed to unfold when I was getting my thoughts together. And I didn't even preach it this week at the services, but it's something that I think can be a very healthy observation. And in light of that, let me just ask you this. When you think in the Bible of people who are familiar with death, who comes to mind? I mean, if I were to ask you to name at least three people in the Bible who were familiar with having to respond to death and deal with death, what three people would you come up with? Well, I'm sure our list would vary greatly. I'm sure we all would have different people, but I can guarantee you every single one of us would have Job. Every single one of us would mention Job. Because Job, and the story of Job, is surrounded and based on the fact that a man lost everything of earthly value. That when you look at Job, a man who, it says, is a righteous and godly man, that he was a wealthy man, as the story of Job begins, and a man who had a house full of children, or at least he had a lineage of children. He had 10 children at the time. And the tragedy of Job's story is that as he was living life, he received the news that he had just lost all of those things. He lost all of his wealth, he lost all of his retirement, he lost all of his investments, and then he lost all of his children. And this all happened immediately. I mean, the news came upon him immediately. In Job chapter 1, notice where it says in verse 13, there was a day when his sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house, and a messenger came to Job and said, the oxen were plowing and the donkeys feeding beside them when the Sabaeans raided them and took them away. Indeed, they have killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you. While he was still speaking, another also came and said, the fire of God fell from heaven and burned up the sheep and the servants and consumed them, and I alone have escaped to tell you. While he was still speaking, another also came and said, the Chaldeans formed three bands, raided the camels and took them away, yes, and killed the servants with the edge of the sword, and I alone have escaped to tell you. While he was still speaking, another also came and said, your sons and daughters were eating and drinking wine in their oldest brother's house, and suddenly a great wind came from across the wilderness and struck the four corners of the house, and it fell on the young people, and they are dead, and I alone have escaped to tell you. Well, you know, there's nothing like getting bad news, okay? There's nothing like getting the news that you've just lost something of great value. Or in his case, it involved people stealing from him, taking things of value, and then, of course, dealing with the news that you've lost all of your children. This has to be the darkest period of anybody's life. For this man to experience in one day, news after news after news, you've just lost everything. You've lost everything of earthly value. I mean, honestly, friends, how would you respond to that? You get the call today, okay, well, you've just lost your job. You get the call right after that, all of your investments, you lose your house, you lost all your investments, it's gone from you. And then you get the news after that call that somebody in your life has passed away, somebody significant to you. I mean, really, how would you respond to that? I mean, could any of us anticipate how Job would respond? It says in verse 20 that when Job got all these bad news and all these bad announcements, it says he arose, tore his robe. Well, I can understand that. I mean, here's a man in great pain and agony, tore his robe, shaved his head, and he fell to the ground and worshiped. He said, naked I came from my mother's womb, naked shall I return there. The Lord gave, the Lord has taken away, blessed be the name of the Lord. And all of this, Job did not sin nor charge God with wrong. Tremendous response. Tremendous response. That's quite a response, and I don't even know if I would have that type of response. But what I want to challenge us with today is that we need to have that type of response. It's not a matter of if death is going to come into your life. You're going to pass through the valley of the shadow of death. That's going to happen. And so the question is, how will we respond to that when it does occur? When death enters our home, when we do have loss of people we love, how do we respond to that? And in looking at the story of Job, I see that there are various ways people are capable. We are capable of responding to this when it does happen, and it's going to happen. For one, we can respond by blaming God. Now, it's pointed out that he was commendable because he did not charge God with any wrong. Well, what's the knee-jerk impulse reaction for most people? Is to charge God with wrong. In fact, if you keep looking at the story of Job, it wasn't just Job receiving that bad news, right? It wasn't just Job receiving the bad news that all of his stuff is gone and all of his children are gone, but Job's wife also got that news. I mean, she had to bear this loss as well. She lost everything of earthly value as well. This woman was in great pain, and then she saw her husband's health taken from him. It says in Job chapter 2 that this trial continued for Job, and that Satan went out from the presence of the Lord in verse 7 and struck Job with painful boils from the sole of his foot to the crown of his head. And he took for himself a potsherd with which to scrape himself while he sat in the midst of ashes. Well, that's incredible pain. I've never been in that. You know, where you have some type of skin disease or where your skin is rotting and you just have to scrape it to try and find some comfort. What a tremendous development. And that's just, I haven't experienced anything like that. Well, his wife is watching this front and center. She sees this happening to Job. And she sees the misery he's in. And her response is, why are you still maintaining your integrity? Curse God and die. You know, her outlook was, why do you still hold on to this business of faith in God? We're way past that. He's abandoned you. So you might as well abandon him. I mean, what's the point of holding on to this God in heaven if he's allowing all this stuff to happen to you? This is not a God worth serving. Curse him and die. Let him strike you down for cursing him and get this over with. Now, again, you know, we ought to consider the fact that she is suffering. I mean, she's lost everything. And even Job, when he's having to respond to the charges made against him, even he said this in chapter 6 and verse 14. At the very least, we need to show mercy to people who are suffering. In chapter 6 and verse 14, and what he's saying is, even if I am responding improperly, you guys need to look at what I'm going through and have a little pity on me. In chapter 6 and verse 14, to him who is afflicted, kindness should be shown by his friends, even though he forsakes the fear of the Almighty. Now, obviously, he hadn't done that. But he's saying when a guy goes through what I'm going through, you guys should show a lot of pity toward him because we've lost everything. And it would be natural for us to say some things that we should not because our mind is cluttered with all this other pain and anguish. And so a part of me is extending that to Job's wife. I mean, here she's saying, Job, get this over with. Why? I mean, and part of me can say, okay, well, here's a woman who's mourning. And in that moment, I'm sure people say things that they regret, or certainly, at the very least, are not right. Because that's just a very difficult moment. Like I said, Stephanie's nephew, and really, you have to appreciate that's a term of endearment for that family because really it's her cousin. Stephanie has just two cousins, and these girls were all raised together as sisters, basically almost the same age. And their children call us aunt and uncle, and our children call them aunt and uncle. It's that type of relationship. And so when she loses her nephew, because that's what it is, I mean, that's who this was, 22-year-old boy, well, we're speaking to the mother. Okay, so she's just lost her son. Stephanie's cousin just lost her son. And she's saying this. She goes, I can't explain to you the pain I'm experiencing. I mean, and I'm sure that's true, that she has three boys and the middle one is gone now. And she's saying, I just can't explain to you what I'm going through. And that's where, you know, in class, we had a good class this morning. You know, that thought was made, you know, sometimes there are things we can't explain in the human tongue that God can know and understand about us. And that's a beautiful thought. But that's reality. You know, that here's a woman who's experiencing a level of pain that I haven't been through it. I don't want to go through it. And yet, that's exactly what Job's wife is going through. She's suffering. Now, she's in a lot of pain, but her conclusion is wrong, Job's wife. Because her conclusion is, let's abandon God. And friends, I imagine we will probably be inclined to think the same thing if we ever get to that depth of despair. And what I would suggest to you is that's the wrong answer. The worst thing we can do when we're going through adversity, especially the loss of a loved one, is to abandon God. That's the very worst thing we can do. And the reason that's the worst thing we can do is we are leaving the source of life. We're leaving the one who has given us life. We're leaving the one who is the reason we are here, and the person, obviously, we have to give an account to. He's the last person we want to abandon. And we have no authority. We have no right to blame him with things that we don't rightfully understand. In Romans chapter 9, the Bible teaches, and I know that Paul is addressing a different matter. He wasn't talking about death, but the principle, I think, of respecting God is true in any scenario. In Romans chapter 9, Paul makes the observation to people who had trouble with Gentiles being converted. And he tells them in Romans chapter 9, in verses 20 and 21, "Indeed, O man, who are you to reply against God? Will the thing formed say to him who formed it, 'Why have you made me like this?' Does not the potter have power over the clay from the same lump to make one vessel for honor and another for dishonor?" And so Paul, you know, yes, I'll accommodate you. Yes, I'll reason with you to the best of my ability. But let's look at the big picture. Who are you to complain against God? Who are you and I to question God or challenge God? We don't have that right. We don't have that prerogative. We are the people breathing His air. We're using the lungs He gave us. We are borrowing time. We are living on His property. We return to Him to give an account. Who are we to question God? And who are we to charge God or challenge God? Now, fortunately, our God is righteous and holy and merciful and good, and He does what is right for us. And we need to trust Him in that. But in the big picture, who are you and who am I to charge God with wrong? And that's a very good thing to remember. And so that's not the right answer. Blaming God is the last thing to do. It's like pulling the ladder from out underneath you. Why would you do that? That's your only source of hope and stability. But a second way you and I can respond to death is we can respond with patience. Because when you look at Job, that's the outcome he was given to. That's the response he was given to. But his response was, he was going to love God and be loyal to Him and endure this business of loss. Keep in mind, when you look at the story of Job, there's just so much happening there we cannot even begin to get through it all today. And I won't even attempt. But when you read the story of Job, one of the things that impresses me about this man is, of course, he is doing very well in life. Okay, yes, he had a lot of stuff, but he was a wise and prudent worker, and those things came to him. Yes, he had a lot of children, but here was a man who was a godly man. That's how the story starts out. He was a man of God, and he was a man of wisdom. He was respected in his community for having good judgment. And people would rise up when he walked into the room. And so here was a man with a good name and good presence by everybody who knew him. Here was a genuinely good, godly man. And his thinking was, and this is when he's lost everything, he says in Job chapter 29 that there was a time in his life when he thought everything was going to stay that way. That he thought he would end his time in this world surrounded by those blessings. In Job 29, in verse 1, it says that he said, "Oh, that I were as in months past, as in the days when God watched over me, when His lamp shone upon my head, when by His light I walked through darkness, just as I was in the days of my prime, when the friendly counsel of God was over my tent, when the Almighty was yet with me, when my children were around me, when my steps were bathed with cream and the rock poured out rivers of oil for me." And so he's looking back and he's saying, "Man, I wish I had what I used to have because it used to be really good." And he says in verse 18 that there was a time, like I said, he thought it would stay that way. In verse 18, "Then I said, I shall die in my nest and multiply my days as the sand. My root is spread out to the waters, and the dew lies all night on my branch. My glory is fresh within me, and my bow is renewed. My bow is renewed in my hand." And so he's just saying, look, there was a time when I thought I would have all this stuff until I left this world, until my time ended. I thought I would be surrounded by my children, bathing in cream, so to speak, of the success in his community. I thought that's how life would end. But obviously, that was not going to happen because these things were taken from him, and that's what he's observing. I hope your life is going well, and I hope you have found rich blessings in walking with God, because the yoke of Christ is a lot lighter than bearing the burden of sin, and hopefully we have all come to see that. But keep in mind, you don't know how your life is going to end. You really don't. You don't know how things are going to unfold for you. You don't know what you're going to lose before you lose your life. You don't know what events could unfold. We just have no idea. But we need to resolve in our mind right now that with whatever happens, we're going to respond to this with faith in God and patience in enduring these things. And while we have these blessings, we are going to be grateful for them. One of the best things you and I can pray for when we pray every day is a heart of understanding and wisdom, realizing, thanking God for all that we have, realizing that all that we have is but for a moment. That you and I would ask God to teach us to number our days that we may gain a heart of wisdom. That we will count the blessings He has given us and be grateful for each and every blessing, not taking them for granted, knowing that we're just borrowing them. And that it's only a matter of time before these things are taken from us. When we live with that perspective, that everything is temporal, and that everything is on loan from God, and we are borrowing them, as was stated in the service earlier, that these are all God's things, then we need to be people who live with appreciation for each and everything we have while we have it. One of the best things we can conclude when we're faced with a funeral or loss is to think, okay, never take people in your life for granted. Never assume they'll always be there, because they won't. So love that person. Let them know you love them. Every day, let them know. In your life, let them know. Solomon says in Ecclesiastes chapter 9, live joyfully, in verse 9, live joyfully with the wife whom you love all the days of your vain life, which He has given you under the sun, all your days of vanity, for that is your portion in life and in the labor which you perform under the sun. Whatever your hand finds to do, do it with your might, for there is no work or device or knowledge or wisdom in the grave where you are going. And so we need to be people who understand that this is all just temporal, and we need to be appreciative of the blessings we still have. Another way people can respond to death, and you see this in the story of Job, is you can respond with ignorance. And when I think of this, I think of Job's friends. And he had three friends initially come and see him. And they're witnessing all these things, and they're just stunned. I mean, for a week they didn't say anything to him. They just sat there with him in misery, feeling for this guy. But then they eventually spoke out, and Eliphaz led the discussion. And it really wasn't a discussion, it was an indictment. It was time to judge Job for all that he was experiencing. Eliphaz was probably the oldest friend there, and so he speaks out. And they all go through, and they all take their turns. At least these three friends, he had a fourth one come and he didn't do this, but at least these three friends were all taking their turns trying to explain to Job, the reason all these things are happening to you is because you've done something wrong. You've sinned somewhere. Because there is no way in this world God would let a good man go through what you're going through. There's no way God would let a righteous man lose all that you've lost. And so they systematically take their turns trying to explain things they don't understand. Trying to explain why Job was being judged by God. And it says in Job chapter 4 that one of the waves of indictment against him from Eliphaz, which if you look at this, this was very arrogant and very painful, I'm sure, for Job to hear. But it says in Job chapter 4, this is what Eliphaz says to him in verse 7 through verse 9. Remember now, whoever punished or perished being innocent, or where were the upright ever cut off? Even as I have seen, those who plow iniquity and sow trouble reap the same. By the blast of God they perish, and by the breath of His anger they are consumed. And so he's just making the observation, where do good people ever perish like you have? You know, what you're going through, only bad people experience that. Only ungodly, unrighteous people experience that. And he's continuing this all throughout. He goes in chapter 5. Notice where I think he just really jabs it even deeper, because this would be hard to hear. It says in verse 3 and verse 4 of chapter 5, I have seen the foolish taking root, but suddenly I cursed his dwelling place. His sons are far from safety. They are crushed in the gate, and there is no deliverer. And so he's saying, you know, when you look at ungodly people, what happens to them is their children die. Their children suffer. Well, why is he saying that? Well, I would think he's trying to say, Job, you know what? The evidence looks like you're getting what you deserve from God because you haven't been living right. Because your children would still be here if you were as righteous and as godly as you claim to be, or at least you appeared to be. Well, here's this man hearing all this. Job is. But he's having to deal with unwise counselors. He's having to deal with men who think they can explain things that they don't understand about life. They think they have these things figured out. And what they are failing to realize, and you can go through the story and read at the end, that God is eventually going to judge these men for what they said about Job and about God. And the first person who he gets after is Eliphaz. But he goes through and he shows these people that you have concluded wrongfully not only about Job but also about me. Because we must not adopt the mentality that only good things happen to good people and only bad things happen to bad people. And it's easy for us to think that. Because yes, the Bible does teach that God does bless His people. That's true. And it does say that the way of a sinner is hard. That's true as well. But we have to understand that God does not put a bubble over us as His people and prevents us or shelters us from experiencing hardship, that sometimes we're going to receive things that are unjust and unfair. And He lets that happen. That righteous people sometimes suffer unjustly. Job is forever an example of that. Here was a man of God. That's how the story starts out. In Job chapter 1 and verse 1, it says, "There was a man in the land of Uz whose name was Job, and that man was blameless and upright and one who feared God and shunned evil." So here's a man who didn't have the reputation of being an immoral man and didn't have the heart or the character of an immoral man. Here is a man who genuinely walked with God, and despite all that, his world turned upside down. So God uses Job not only to teach Job's friends, but also to teach us that righteous people sometimes suffer in this life unjustly. That righteous people sometimes have things happen to them that are not fair. And we have to still trust our God when those things happen. And it's not just Job. You can look at the apostles, how the apostle Paul said, "To the present hour," 1 Corinthians 4, "to the present hour, we both hunger and thirst and were poorly clothed and beaten and homeless." Well, I mean, if you take that list, who's that going to happen to? Just bad people, right? Only ungodly people will have these things happen to them. But Paul's saying it's happening to them as an apostle. "We have been made as the filth of the world, the offscouring of all things until now." And so we have to understand that yes, God blesses us, but God also lets us face adversity in this world. And time and chance happen to everybody. Now He'll still lead us through, He'll still guide us, He still won't let anything happen to us that we cannot endure, but you're not always going to get what you want. And you're not always going to get things that are fair in this world. And God's never made that promise to us. And if we can't get that through our heads with Job and the apostles, then maybe we can remember it with Jesus. Because here is a man who was perfect, never did anything wrong to anybody, could say the right thing at every occasion, and yet even that righteous person didn't even have a place to put his head at night. He was poor. He was mistreated. He was falsely accused. He was crucified. So let us not adopt the mentality of these ignorant friends of Job thinking, well, good things only happen to good people and bad things only to bad, because that is just not the case. And these stories should eliminate that for us, make these things very clear to us. But let me say one last thing, and that is that we can respond to death by having faith. And again, that's the way Job did this, that he responded rightly. Now, I know the story goes on to talk about, he's saying, look, I wish God were a man so I can bring him face to face and ask him, why are you letting this happen to me? And he'll later apologize for that. But nowhere does he ever charge God with wrong. In Job chapter 1, he says, as we read earlier in verses 20 through 22, that he arose, tore his robe, shaved his head, fell to the ground and worshiped. Now, who in their right mind, when they've just lost everything, is going to respond by saying, okay, I want to worship God? And you see this happening in the Bible, where Daniel, same thing, falsely accused, persecuted, fell down and worshiped God. What's there to worship God for in a moment like that? And the answer is seen in what is said in the discussion here. Then he says, look, naked I came from my mother's womb, naked shall I return there. In other words, everything that I have is on loan from God. It's not my stuff anyway. It's stuff he let me borrow. The Lord gave and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. In other words, he's saying, look, I'm grateful for these things, but I understand where they came from. I'm grateful for these experiences in life, but I understand where they came from. And it's not me. And I need to remember the fact that life is not original with me. It doesn't start with me. I didn't invent my life. I didn't create my life. I have been allowed to have life. And being allowed to have life, I have been given certain blessings in life. And the only person who has made this possible is my Maker, is my God, is my Creator. And Job's thinking is, yes, I hate to lose these things, but I was going to lose them anyway, because I am not supposed to have them forever. And so my thinking is, thank you. Thank you for even letting me have them. Yeah. So that's the right attitude, of just being grateful that God even lets us have these moments in time and to have these people to share life with. I'm thinking of this, what I'm trying to say here. The father of this boy, of the young man that passed away. So impressed with the father. His response was, among many things. Now, he did say that he had never cried like that before. You know, because he got the news at 3:15 in the morning. The cops came to his house because this accident had happened early, this car crash. And they bring this boy's wallet to the house at 3:15 in the morning. There's three cops. And they present him with the news that his son has just been killed. And this was, you know, his son was living there at the house. And they had all these plans of the son working with the father and in the business. And they just, it, obviously, very tragic news. And he said that he's never cried 24 hours straight like he did that day. He cried endlessly. But preparing for the service, I saw him the night before, and we were talking. And among all the things he said, one thing that he said just really stood out to me, and I was so grateful for it, I hugged him for it, is that he says, I don't blame anyone for this. I'm not bitter. It was an accident. But then he says, I don't blame God. And I was so grateful to hear that, because that's a profound outlook. That's a profound response to that. And that's the right response. And we have to understand that that's where we have to be as the people of God, just like Job. Yes, I hate losing these things, and yes, I hate losing these people, but thank you, God, for even letting me experience this. Thank you for letting me have these moments in time, because this has all come from your hand. That's a profound outlook. And because Job had that outlook, his faith was eventually rewarded, and the beautiful story of Job ends with just a it's just so beautiful. Because this man kept his faith and his integrity, and the Lord rewarded him for it, in the sense that the Lord blessed the latter days, Job 42 and verse 12, the Lord blessed the latter days of Job more than his beginning. So he had more stuff come his way. That's comforting. But it says in verse 13, he also had seven
sons and 3 daughters. In verse 15, in all the land were found no women so beautiful as the daughters of Job, and their father gave them inheritance among their brothers. After this, Job lived 140 years and saw his children and grandchildren for 4 generations. Job died, old and full of days. What you have here is an example of how, when we do keep our faith, it can lead to further reward. Without faith, you cannot please God. You have to believe that He is, but that you also must believe He is a rewarder of those who diligently seek Him. And the fact that God rewarded this man should prove to us that He will eventually do that for those who love Him, even in this life, but especially in the next. And so how do we respond, friends? Not if, but when. We're going through the valley of shadow of death. It's coming. Well, how are we going to respond to that? Are we going to blame God? Are we going to ignorantly try and explain things about this that God has not revealed to us? Or are we going to deal with this with patience and deal with this with faith? And I hope we do. I hope we do the latter. I hope we do this in a way that is pleasing to God. And may God bless you with these thoughts, and may they be of some comfort to you in some way. Thank you for listening to me, and thank you for hearing me out and letting me express this sermon this morning. Could be that you hear, we hope you don't wait till the end of your road to try and make things right with God. You don't have to. You shouldn't do that. You can have all your sins forgiven through the blood of Christ, even this hour, even today, if you would put your faith in Him as God's Son, confess that, repent of your sins, and be immersed in water for the forgiveness of sins. And that's what puts you into Christ, Galatians 3:27. So we hope you do that. If you need to make things right with Him in a public way, please respond as we stand and sing.